What's going on out there, everybody? Welcome to another Addicted Fishing podcast. Skeleton crew tonight.
Very.
Just Jordo and I in house.
Yeah, let's call it A-team.
No, I'd say this is the reserve A-team. When you're in trouble,
yeah,
you know who to call. This is the A-team. Yep. We got producer Hayden in this podcast, replacing producer Clint. Thank God. I hope Clint hears this. Oh, he's going to because he's supposed to be listening.
Hayden's a little nicer to look at across here.
Yeah, he's probably not so
he's bitchy. Not mouth breathing and, you know. All he ever sees is the back of Clint's throat, you know.
Yeah. Oh, and with his head down on his cell phone when he's supposed to be producing, you know. But, yeah. Anyways, we are in studio. We're docking these things out for you guys last week. I hope you guys got a chance to check out the podcast we had with Captain Jeff Wickersham from the WDFW. That was a really cool guest. We had an awesome live feed with him. Afterwards, you can check that out on our Addicted Fishing YouTube channel. It is up there if you say, you know, I think it says, like, conversation or discussion with a game warden. But as we kind of keep going forward, we didn't get anybody in this week, but we're going to really try to bring in a lot of these guests. If you guys have suggestions and ideas that we want to get out, I do want to do a little call out right now that if you are a hatchery worker, we kind of want to get some of these guys that are maybe running some of these hatchery complexes that are possibly listening to this podcast, or if you know one, we'd love to get one in here to kind of give people the ins and outs of what goes in. I mean, people just think salmon swim up, you bonk them, you grab the eggs, you spawn them, and that's it.
That is a big thing, and especially we've done a lot of podcasts about the broodstock programs and how the volunteers for that operate and how the system operates, but we've never talked to anybody else that's on the other side of the scene.
Right.
You know, like it's easy to talk about, I just grab him and throw him in a tank.
Yeah.
But then what happens?
Well, that's the fun
how hard
part.
Is it? Exactly.
Yeah, that's and the fun
people
part.
Give the, you know, these places a lot of crap sometimes. And I think a lot, well, you know, some places they definitely a little deserving. Under effort as places we, or maybe even underqualified, you know, but it would be cool to have a hatchery worker in here. We know one of our good friends, Kevin Gray, as a hatchery worker. Maybe we can have him in soon.
Yeah. Except for like all the guests that I'm trying to get in, they'll live like,
yeah,
3 and 4 hours away, and I'm like, hey, we'll buy your hotel, dinner, whatever you need, like gas money. It's, you know, it's expensive these days with Bidenomics. Okay, we're not going to go there, but you know what I mean, guys. But yeah, so if you know a hatchery worker, reach out to me personally. Just Cameron Black, hit me up on Facebook, Instagram, whatever works, and then trying to get some of that kind of stuff lined up. What have you been doing?
Lining up crab.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we nailed them today. We got our tire limit, 60 crab in 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I think I feel like an hour and a half of that was handicapped.
Yep, exactly. You guys are going to have to watch the video to see what we mean.
No, that's true. Yeah, we got done with that. Ate one of those when you left, and man, oh my God. A little bit extra heated melted butter on those things. Like that Old Bay garlic is legit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was very, very good. But I went out there and did a little crabbing early in the morning, got home, got everything taken care of, and then, yes, sir, here we are. Here we are.
No, it's been good, though. Fishing's been tough. Done a few really good trips. We have one coming from a wild and scenic section of a river in southern Oregon that we just did. Sean and I went. We got 2 different episodes on it, and it's just an all-out adventure. Huge whitewater and wind drift boats, bears and deer and salmon and steelhead, and we got our first winter of the year already down there. So it was pretty. It's going to be a cool video. So we have a lot of really good ones coming out. Cam was just talking about some really neat ideas, some next level technological fishing that he's going to be going and doing soon. And so there's just some cool videos in the docket for you guys to see. So be on the lookout for them here on YouTube.
Yeah. We did have a bunch of rain this week, too, finally, because, well, we needed it. It was our first blowout. And like I think you were saying this morning, it's like, oh, it's like November 7th and our first blowout this year. But hopefully that's going to bring some B-Run Coho. But we kind of wanted to get in here a little bit and kind of talk some of the ins and outs on, like, some of the floating and the drift boat.
Yeah, I was going to say that leads stuff, right into what the conversation today is.
Yep, so we finally got a little water in the systems. Sounds like there's some fish around. Like you said, sounds like there's actually been a couple of like these like super early winter stragglers around, because honestly, I'm worried sick. Like I am really, really worried, because generally, like, you know, steelhead numbers tend to correlate really well with B-Run Coho numbers. It seems like when we get a real strong B-Run, we do get a real strong winter run, just kind of as a whole.
Yeah.
And the B-Run's been non-existent.
Yeah. I mean, literally non-existent.
And I mean, here's the thing. Okay. Oh, well, I catch him. I catch 20. I caught 20. Okay.
Everyone's supposed
to. I'm just going to just say, like, when I say non-existent, I'm just saying, like, as a whole, like, the Northwest, there's some rivers there is no fish. There are no fish. There's some rivers that are being, like, reduced. You know, the fisheries are being reduced down to, like, a one fish limit or closed to fishing. And it did seem like everything was going really good. Really, really good for A-runners, like, late September and early October. Really good. And then just all of a sudden, just crickets.
Yeah, there, I mean, there's got to be some underlying factor to it, because there's no shortage of bait and no shortage of fish. So how does literally a one late run disappear in a situation like what you saw, especially in the big river all year? You know, very, and not just in your home river, but for, you know, 50, 60, 100 miles around, it's tough. There's not a lot of fish. Now there's a lot of water.
Yeah, now there's a lot of water, and if there was fish coming, like, the reality is there's, like, no more excuses. I will say, I mean, there's still leaves on the trees, and they are still, like, hanging on. Like, and they've definitely turned color, but shoot, some years, like, they're all gone by now. So, I mean, just to, like... Well, I mean, honestly, like, to put it in perspective, we're still seeing, you know, like, 150-ish, you know, kind of going over Bonneville Dam. But, shoot, I think, like, at this time last year, we were seeing, like, 1,000 fish a day. And, man, so I'm just checking the dam counts right now, too. So it just kind of definitely shows that there are a lack of some fish coming in. But still... trickling in nevertheless. But yeah, I've already saw you know, just kind of cruising the interwebs just a few days ago, I actually saw, like, some of the first rafting incident where a guy pushed a raft up underneath a lay down underneath a sweeper,
yeah,
and popped up on the other side, rolled the raft, had his life jacket on, it sounds like, fortunately got himself out of the situation, you know, one of those things where he's the most scared I've ever been. And then looking at some of the pictures, you know, kind of looking at it and not really seeing that it wasn't in one of, it didn't seem to be in one of those areas that now I'm playing Monday morning quarterback, you know, hindsight 2020, of course, but it didn't seem like to be in one of those situations where you couldn't, like, get a raft to the side, like one of those runs that you get committed to at the top and then at the bottom you, like, find a sweeper.
Could have been a matter of inexperience.
I'm not assuming anything. I don't know this person. I can't even remember who it was, honestly, for the life of me. But it seemed like a situation that probably shouldn't happen. Just whereas, like, you know, there was an expression, and, you know, whitewater kayaking, wood kills. Like, wood in these rivers, and this time of year especially, because you have some storms coming in. You have leaves that could still be on the tree. You have a lot of potentials for a lot of stuff laid on you. We had our first blowout of the year. Like, the riverbanks are getting hit. By, you know, high water and high current for the first time.
Yeah, no more seasonal high waters move more wood or obstructions or debris than the first ones.
Yeah.
Than the first high waters that you see. And even if it compiles of a bunch of small ones, that's almost more dangerous even than a log. I mean, more stuff to get stuck on, things that build bigger log jams. You know, the thing, if you take anything from this podcast today, especially if you are learning or would you call yourself inexperienced, you know, anywhere under 5 to 6 years of rowing experience, I would call inexperienced. And the main point of the story is the guy had his life jacket on. You know, I don't think we're the best examples all the time here addicted on doing so. I always wear mine in big rivers or heavy whitewater situations. But if you're learning, I think if you take anything from this live feed, it's to wear your life jacket, because that is going to save you a lot of hassle while learning. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I've been in situations multiple times. I've personally only flipped a raft twice. One was resurfing Oak Springs, and I was steering, or one was running Rainy Falls on the Rogue River. That was a hard flip. And then the other one was completely unexpected on my home river. I was out there and high water came up and smashed, you know, a lot of these rivers can get very, very big rapids when the water starts to climb, and flipped end over end, hit a wave so big that it flipped me backwards on them in a 15-foot raft, you know, and was swimming before I knew it. So, and I had my life jacket on both times and made it out of every situation. So, especially fishing, that's the biggest thing. Have those life jackets on. It's basis rule number one, other than looking good.
Oh, for sure. I mean, to be fair too, like when I flipped my raft, I flipped it on my home. Well, Yeah, my home river, whatever. Yeah. I mean, one that I have floated a million times in a spot that never should have, like, really never should have flipped in. Like, never could have backwards, one armed, blindfolded.
In the dark.
Like, it should never, ever have flipped there. And then, like you said, I mean, just to be fair, up until that incident, like, if it was kind of 50-50 on life jackets. I mean, we're not the river, this in particular river doesn't have any like class 3 ratings. I believe like under like a, over a class yep. 3 rating, you're required
on the river, you're required to have a PFD.
Required to have PFDs on clients. But believe it or not, it's actually
in,
not required.
In Oregon, it is illegal it's not a misdemeanor. You get a ticket in any river that if you go any through anything class 2 and above without a life jacket, you can get a ticket.
If you're on camera. Okay, so maybe in class
yeah.
2.
Yeah. I mean, class 2 and above, you have to have a life jacket on going through the rapid legally.
Yeah.
Which is just funny to me because it's like, I guess people want to die. They want their civil liberty. But, you know what I mean? Like,
well, people do control. Stupid stuff. But back to you, kind of like
these rivers in particular, these are still party rivers. People were dying constantly because they were out drinking in the sun and not wearing a life jacket, jumping in and not coming back up.
And then you got people that vacation and they don't, and to be fair, it's going to happen this time of year too. And it's sad because it happens so much and especially it seems like this time of year, a lot of guys are flocking to the rivers, you know, they're full of salmon, guys that maybe don't fish all the time. And then they show up and the water's a little high and they get swept off their feet waiting, or they put a pontoon where they shouldn't. But I mean,
yeah, my good buddy, oh, I'm sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
My good buddy, my good buddy Coulter, some of you might know him, but good buddy Coulter, this is a good prime example of stuff like this. The guy that goes to the river a ton, fishes a ton, got a raft and started going every day. And within a couple of years flipped, you know, within 1 or 2 years flipped like 2 or 3 times, you know, in bad situations because he's jumping out of his skill level. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not that he wasn't skilled enough to be fishing that area. It was, he hadn't put himself in those situations enough to understand how your raft works, how you work, how your own brain works, how your motor skills work under pressure. You know what I mean? And that's a big thing, is just being able to keep your cool in those situations, you know?
Like, well, going back to where I flipped mine raft, like it was just a situation where like I had basically rode through like what you would want to call a rapid. It was a riffle.
Mm-hmm.
And just dropped
a boil.
Just dropped the sticks down and just said, oh yeah, I was actually just kind of squaring up and kind of thinking about fishing the next run that was just kind of coming ahead. Usually just kind of pull over river left. And I was just kind of floating down the middle. And honestly, I had a little extra water that I didn't want in the boat. And I had a little bit heavier guy that I didn't really want in the back. And next thing you know, the weight shifted. He shifted and frickin' the boat was up in the air and I hit the water and came up on the other side. Just, I mean, instantly.
Yeah, there's
and
nothing thank God. Quite like and the feeling. I hope not everybody feels this, but there's nothing quite like the feeling of when you're underwater and it dawns on you, you're like, ah, shit. That happened.
I don't, like, to this day.
I'm actually in the freaking water right now.
Right. To this day. Damn it. To this day, when the raft flipped up and over, I kind of vaguely remember like going towards the water, but I do not remember hitting the water coming up on the other side. I remember like having my in the moment, adrenaline, whatever. But I just remember holding on to the side of the raft and then just looking at it like, where am I? How the hell? And then also it's like, oh God, where are my guys? I mean, thank God I had that day. You know, like I said, I was like 50-50 at that time. Mm-hmm. Water was low. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
And thank God we put on life jackets. One of the life jackets didn't necessarily fully pop open.
Uh-huh.
Like, it only came up like half his side, and he was the bigger guy. And, you know, if you're listening, you know what I'm saying. It is what it is. But, like, it didn't, like, fully Velcro pop. And, fortunately, in the spot, like I said, we were kind of done. We were past the boil, past where anything could have been real hazardous. It was deep. I mean, you only need water deeper than 5 feet to kill you. Yeah. So the reality was it was deeper
unless
than
you're
that.
Really short.
But, yeah, unless you're short, unless you're Marlin, then it's 4.5. But regardless, like, Yeah, you know, I mean, it was the day that fortunately I put my life. So ever since then, it doesn't matter. I don't care if I'm floating up creek that's 100 CFS. And a lot of it comes down to like that wood and stuff. And going back to that just original story, just identifying kind of those spots, like those boils and that wood and having that experience. But then also, you know, for me, coming from my background, like that, the wood thing freaks me out because wood is an unnatural thing that when it falls in the river, it sits there for a while, and it's not necessarily like rocks and boulders. I mean, they can kill you too, don't get me wrong, but they get kind of moved and sculpted and the way water kind of flows. And yeah, there's back eddies and there's boils and stuff, but not as severe as logs. And logs also have a bunch of sharp stuff that can hang you up. A lot of people that can get grabbed. In fact, there was just one I just read a few days ago it was on the upper Cowlitz just a couple, 3 days ago, 2 days ago, that they were talking that they knew where the body was. It was hung up in something and they were going to retrieve it. Mm. I mean, up at somewhere out of Blue Creek.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. So like this is so, and I know of some snags and stuff up there and some pretty nasty sticky bank, but I mean, it can happen to anybody. So the reality is
or in a lot of rivers, there's man-made wood structure, which is even worse.
right. Which is put in by these local rivers. Which is put in by the state, and then pretty much Fish and Wildlife's out to kill you.
Yes, exactly. That's the conclusion.
No, I'm totally not kidding.
Yeah, kill you and your bank account.
They're not out to kill you, but they don't really care that you're fishing it. So the reality is, guys, if there's one lesson, just kind of talking about this right now, it's like, rule number one, wear your life jacket. I mean, Jordan, for heaven's sakes, like, I mean, you've rafted, whitewater guided, like, for all your life, and you flipped.
Yeah.
I mean, I flipped on
worst thing nothing. You can do is be comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, in any situation. And where you get hurt is the places you notice a lot more inexperienced rafters and drift boaters and rowers have less crashes than at times the people that do it the most, you know, that
complain
a drift boat when they shouldn't be really running a drift boat on those sections anyways, is because they got so confident and so comfortable that they eventually, you know,
you run a rapid 10 times, and if you do it perfectly every single time, you're good. Until that one time, right at the stop of the rapid, you just take one more little bump to the side and it puts your nose somewhere else. And then all of a sudden it just cascades from there. So.
No pun intended.
Yeah. But either way, guys, we hope you guys have a safe and enjoyable winter season. Oh, and the water's freaking cold too.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna be doing a live feed, you guys, about this. I'm going on for about an hour and a half or so. So, definitely be tuning in to that, or go check it out on the YouTube channel. There'll be somewhere on there, and you come and enjoy.
Yeah. As always, guys, we appreciate you guys tuning in. Be sure to check out theaddicted.fishing. We're gonna be doing some winter drops. We're getting close to holiday season and all that good stuff. So appreciate your guys' support there. I think there's still very few items from the drop. I mean, Hayden's nodding at me, yes, but the keeper of the store, the real keeper of the store, we know how it is. But there's still some really cool items on there, guys, and we appreciate your support. And like I said, hatchery workers, any of you guys, complex managers, like, you know, shoot me a message and let us know what guests you guys want to get on here. And we'll see you on the next one.